Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City, and I welcome you. You can watch today's program by going to Ustream channel and then just searching for Gary Null. Also, if for any reason you ever tune in your local radio and we're not there, or you go up on the internet and there's a problem listening, there's always the telephone and hundreds of thousands of people using almost 6 million minutes in the recent past to listen in. 619 is the number, 619-550-0869, 619-550-0869. Today there won't be a guest because I have so many important issues to discuss. Of course, the latest on health and healing. And also from our public health segment, we're going to talk about the statins. There's new reports on statins based upon examining all the world studies, independent studies on statins for heart conditions and cholesterol. And the results are startling. I'll share that with you. The leading obstetrician in Israel is coming out against the human papillomavirus for young girls. I'll share that with you. Monsanto wants to outlaw all labeling of genetically engineered food through the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And if this goes through, nothing will ever be labeled as genetically modified or containing genetically modified ingredients, even though we are making an enormous effort to do that right now. So that's one more reason to oppose this. Also today, a couple of commentaries. One from Chris Hedges, The Act of Killing from Truthdig, as well as The Global Elite's Crimes Against Humanity and the Subversion of Happiness and Truth, Global Research's Colin Todhunter. I also have the latest on why are they privatizing so many prisons? And did you ever wonder what happened after Hillary Clinton and everyone else took credit for liberating Libya? Well, we're going to revisit Libya today and show you what it's like there, and not a good place to be. Let's begin. First off, most people don't consume avocados. They're under the impression that they're not healthy because they have so much fat. Just the opposite is true. Avocados are one of nature's most perfect foods, especially the quality of the fat that they do contain. A new study substantiates this. This is from the International Congress of Nutrition in Granada, Spain. They took a look at all the scientific literature and found, also based upon Loma Linda University researchers, that when you include fresh avocado into a lunch meal, either replacing other foods or simply adding it to a meal, you create satiety, which means you're no longer hungry. You lower your blood sugar levels, which helps keep those spikes from happening, in especially in people suffering from diabetes or prediabetes. You have a more even insulin response, and as a consequence, you're healthier. That's the latest study on why we should be consuming avocados. Interesting, I planted an avocado tree beside my home 18 years ago. And each year I would get tiny little avocados, not much more than 1 or 2 inches in size. Weren't edible for me, I'd give them to the animals. This year, for the first time, I looked up and this huge tree, about 40 feet across and 50 feet high, had hundreds of avocados, the largest that I'd ever seen. They were the size of grapefruits. Delicious, you bet. Interesting how nothing happens for decades and then suddenly they're there. Same thing happened with a plum tree. not a single plum in 18 years, and then hundreds in just one season. Another item we don't consume enough of in our society is oregano, and especially fresh oregano. It's not just a culinary herb, it's also a medicinal herb, and it's used in natural healing, but it's just been used for thousands of years. The latest on this is really surprising. Now, just we know its unique flavor. I kind of call it the pizza flavor because that's where we use probably most of it. But it's got a lot of iron, manganese, vitamin K. Remember, vitamin K is important for promoting bone growth and the maintenance of bone density and the production of blood clotting proteins. It's got a tremendous amount of fiber, but it also helps treat respiratory tract disorders, gastrointestinal disorders, menstrual cramps, urinary tract disorders. You can apply it to the skin. It can help dandruff and acne. And it also is rich in antioxidants, according to the Journal of Nutrition. It has very high antioxidant levels. But there's even more to it. It can help reduce cholesterol. It can lower your risk of colon cancer. It has tryptophan in it. And once I looked at all the studies, here are the latest on why we should have this remarkable herb in our diet on a regular basis. It can kill bacteria. I mean a broad spectrum of bacteria. Some Portuguese researchers found that the essential oils were effective against 41 strains of Listeria, which is a terribly deadly pathogen in food. It's important because of a compound called carvacol, C-A-R-V-A-C-O-L, that it's rich in. British and Indian researchers found that the essential oil of Himalayan oregano could even kill the hospital superbug MRSA. And in fact, a Professor Salisbury, in his final report, said, quote, "We have done a few preliminary tests and have found that the essential oil of oregano kills MRSA at a dilution of 1 to 1,000. It's also good against inflammations. Scientists from Bonn University, Germany, and also Zurich in Switzerland, identified an active ingredient, another active ingredient, called EBCP, which is good against osteoporosis and arterial sclerosis. The United Arab Emirates University reported in the peer-reviewed journal PLOS ONE that oregano inhibits cancer cells. So those are what we know from the good scientific journals it does. But we also know from clinicians using that it's good for bloating, heartburn, bronchitis, dandruff, acne, asthma, coughs, headaches, heart conditions, intestinal parasites, it's terrific killing, arthritis, fatigue, and menstrual cramps. New research shows that the vitamin B complex can help prevent strokes. This was published in the peer-reviewed journal Neurology. And what they found in this study, they examined 14 randomized clinical trials involving 54,000 people. And they found that if you were using a B complex compared to a placebo for 6 months, you had a good reduction in your risk of stroke. Now, by the way, we already know that vitamin C thins the blood better than aspirin, and it's all good where aspirin kills about 24,000 people a year because it causes bleeding, and that's bad. We already know that quercetin thins the blood, and therefore doesn't allow the red blood cell platelets to aggregate and cause the clumps that then cause clots and then cause either a stroke or heart attack and also thrombosis, especially those of you who are flying. Now, I fly a lot, and I always take quercetin and vitamin C and vitamin E, coenzyme Q10 with garlic, always before I get on a plane. And the longer the plane ride, every 2 hours, I take more antioxidants, especially those that are known to thin the blood. And thinning the blood helps you if you have AFib, helps you if you have a tendency to stroke. So you're saving your life by taking those. But the B complex works also. For those of you who are taking chemotherapy, a new research study in the Annals of Neurology shows that antioxidants can help prevent a lot of the side effects of chemotherapy. So that's important, because a lot of people, their hair falls out, they get nauseous, they lose weight, they lose muscle mass. Take your antioxidants. It does not interfere in the chemotherapy, but it can make a difference. Have you ever wondered why some boys and girls are very aggressive in their behavior, even when there's nothing that's really provoking them? It just seems to be part of their temperament. Well, there's new research from the University of Montreal, and it was done by a team led by Professor Emeritus Richard Tremblay, who I've had on this program, from the University of Montreal, and also Professor Sif from McGill University. This was published in PLOS One, and what they're saying is this: genes related to self-control could be disabled by the parental environment. I'll read this from the journal, and then I'll put it into lay language. Quote, in the first study, published in July, the team found that among men who had chronic aggressive behavior during childhood and adolescence, blood levels of four biomarkers of inflammation were lower than in men who exhibited average levels of aggression in their behavior. This means that using four specific biomarkers of inflammation called cytokines, we were able to distinguish men with chronic physical aggression histories from those without. In the second study, it was observed that the same men with aggressive past, that the DNA encoding this cytokines showed myelination patterns different from those of comparison groups. Myelination, or methylation, is an epigenetic modification, hence reversible, of DNA in relation to parental imprinting. Let me repeat that. The DNA is imprinted based upon parental imprinting. It plays a role in regulating gene expression, end quote. And then they did a 30-year follow-up, collecting the blood works and interviewing the people. So what does this mean in lay language? I tried to find it in our old archives over the weekend. I did an interview with Dr. Lawrence LeShan. I was brand new as a research intern at the Institute of Applied Biology when he was a senior researcher. He was at the end of his career. I was just beginning mine. But there was a transition for about 2 years where we were able to have lots of discussions. We spoke a lot about things in life. And one of the things that he said to me that really made an impact was that you're more than your conditioning. You have free will, but your conditioning will almost always dominate your free will. And his seminal study was to do an in-depth analysis and a follow-up of women who were completely healthy. They had no breast cancer in their families, and yet he could predict with a high degree of accuracy which of the women who had no history of breast cancer would develop breast cancer based upon what he considered the unappreciated gene. Now, that was just his own statement. What did he mean by that? Women who worked hard at helping others, sacrificing much of their time and their quality of life so that their kids or their partner or others would have a better life, felt unappreciated. They felt that their sacrifice was for nothing, and yet they continued to sacrifice time and energy. And he said, those will be the women who manifest that in breast cancer. Later, the top medical officer in New York City and I were having long discussions, and he said that his research also confirmed the same thing. You could pretty much predict who was going to get cancer based upon their psychological state. I then spoke with Hans Selye, the father of distress psychology, and he said that stress is normal, and you can thrive through happy stress when you go to a ball game or a dance or you're intimate. Those are all stress, but they're positive stress. He was concerned about the impact of distress when you are anxious, rageful, insecure, fearful. Your body creates hormones. Those hormones literally age your body and turn off your DNA. And that's why it's hard for some people to get over something. They just keep hanging on to their anger, hanging on to their need for some form of vengeance. All of these people were working separate from one another, but they all held one common theme. There's something other than our current concept of what we should do in our life that's causing us to act out. What this means is this, and this is what this study confirmed. One day you hear someone say something to you that is supposed to be positive. They like you, they love you, they care about you, they want to spend time with you. And we've all experienced that. But then what they do the next moment is just the opposite. They write a nasty email, they leave a toxic, threatening kind of phone message. They say things with the intent of trying to make you feel bad about yourself or to hurt you. And then you think, well, which is it? You know, what you're saying about love and then what you say is hate. You can't have love and hate. They are complete opposites. And people who are sharing true love will never share true hate. It just doesn't happen. They may find disappointment, but there's a third rail you stop at. But these people don't stop, and we see them all the time. And they seem to find satisfaction in some form of either verbal abuse. Think of superiors in an office. Think of superiors in the military. Think of the cast member, Jennifer Lopez, who hasn't her contracts or her writers that no one's allowed to look in her eyes. I mean, think of that. That's just bristling with hate and contempt for anyone else, the ego, the narcissism. And yet, because they're successful or making money, no one will say, you know, this really stupid behavior. I mean, you're looking really insensitive. Well, of course they're insensitive. Their whole life is based upon how they feel. Where's that come from? How did they get that way? Because there are some people who are very successful who are very kind and thoughtful. I had an opportunity earlier in my life when I was at the beginning of my career, and I had some best-selling books of counseling some extraordinarily remarkable human beings, some of the greatest names in the history of film and stage. In fact, one of them just died last year at 95. I remember her coming to my office 22 years ago, and I almost always see a lot of people at night when everyone else in the office is gone, so nobody leaks something to the National Enquirer. Well, such and such, you know, is getting seen for some reason. This way they have complete privacy. And this woman would not have lived another year, but she lived another 22 years in really good health and died at 95. She was an extremely humble, gracious person. No sense of entitlement, no arrogance, no ego, just a positive person. So there's a lot of people who are successful, celebrities, famous, who are just, they're kind. And then there are a lot who are not. Where does it come from? This study is saying your parents put it into your genes. How that happened? Well, let me give you an example. Let's say, and we actually found this through regressive hypnosis with Michael Elner, who's probably the best at what he does in the United States. He's a hypnotherapist. A person goes through one relationship after another, and it's always the fault of the male who does something wrong, and the woman lashes out, but it's never her fault. And so by the time she sees me for physical problems, but all this comes up, I suggest she see Michael. Michael finds out with her, and she comes and discusses it, that when she was young, her father was extremely harsh with her. That no matter what she did, it was never good enough. he would always berate her and never treated her with the same respect that he did for his other sister, or his other daughter, her sister. And the mother never defended her. The mother was weak, the father was dominant, so the mother was a passive spectator. Her abuse, it wasn't physical abuse, it was mental, psychological, verbal abuse. And it was unrelenting. And because the father was an intellect and an academic, she never had the capacity to fight back. After all, what can a kid do? A kid doesn't have the skills or the tools to fight back. They're in a captive environment. They're completely reliant upon their parents. And now the information that she's getting from her father is, this is love. Now, I spoke with Dr. Henry Grayson about this, and he is very probably the finest holistic psychologist of this current generation. And he said, many women who end up in very bad relationships, they think that even abuse in a relationship is love. And that all stems back from the genes absorbing the message and the energy of the message, and then looking for an opportunity to re-express this in some current modern day setting in a relationship. And suddenly a person starts to say one thing, but act out completely opposite, seemingly self-sabotaging any opportunity to have a healthy relationship, but never looking in the mirror and see that they're at fault, never accepting responsibility. Because why? Because the father never saw himself as the perpetrator, but only the victim of having a stupid kid. So therefore, he could never take responsibility, never apologize for what he had imprinted in the child's mind. The child was the deficient one. You didn't get enough grades. You didn't clean up your room right. You're always making a mess. You're an embarrassment to me. So the child started off life feeling extremely put upon, then absorbed all this, and that turned off the DNA of vulnerability, turned off the DNA switch of heart energy being shared, but it turned on a highly aggressive way of surviving. So the person went out into the world and survived, using everything her father told her. And, you know, that you have to show that no matter what the circumstances or what is right, you have to always be right. And if you don't get your way, push until you do. And if you knock on the door and no one opens it, kick it down. And if someone won't hear a soft message, scream it at them. And if someone doesn't bend to your will, humiliate them, browbeat them until they finally surrender to you emotionally. And then make them feel that they should apologize for what they put you through. Wow. And then you look at how many abusive relationships there are in our society by the tens of millions. And why do they get into them, and why do they stay in them? And then what does that do to the children? It recreates the whole pattern all over again. So now what we have is we have new information, really good scientific information, that we are our parents. Not just one, but both. Even our grandparents' genetic or epigenetic energy is in us, and that literally turns on or off the expression of the DNA. And hence, it's the same way when we get sick. And that's what Larry LeChan was saying. Think of the women who are in bad relationships, don't feel appreciated, feel used, feel overworked, underappreciated. And so if they're not growing in a positive, spiritual, healthy, happy way, then they'll grow out of control, and that's a cancer cell. So bits and pieces of this puzzle have been around there for decades, each one having one part of the answer. This study, along with Bruce Lipton's original pioneering work, put it all together. So what is the takeaway message? It is this. About 95% of everything we think and do in a given day has nothing to do with the mindfulness of the day we're in. It has to do with conditioning, from much earlier in life, before we could intellectualize it and process it. This has nothing to do with free will. This is what we're born with. This is what we have. If you were fortunate enough and blessed with parents that were enlightened and not just extending their doctrines of discipline, their encoded religious or political or social or cultural, ethnic, ideological energy into you, you are fortunate. If they gave you real unconditional love, you're extremely fortunate. But if you wonder why so many people are so screwed up today, and look at the people that need reality shows and the debasement and the vulgarities. Look at the people that need to see people acting out in inappropriate ways. Look at the unnecessary competitiveness of all things, the selfishness of all things. Recently someone said to me, but I don't believe that the person was even conscious of the power of what this person said, is I have no interest in politics at all, and I'm only interested in philanthropic efforts. Okay. Well, then that means you're not interested in anything in our environment, global warming, all the different crises, because that's all political. Because it's the body politics that allows that to happen without making a national, worldwide effort to stop it. You're not interested in Fukushima and building number 4 that could collapse at any time from a small earthquake or even another typhoon, one which went through last week, because that's political. TEPCO and the Japanese government have refused to enlist the world's effort in a Marshall Plan to deal with that problem, and that's a huge problem, one that could literally affect the survival of everyone on the planet, and yet we pay no attention to it. You're not interested in genetic engineering of our food, which can cause long-term health consequences. You're not interested in the soil pollution with nitrogen-based fertilizers, or the air pollution or acidification of the oceans. You're not interested in 18 million children going hungry. That's political. Or the fact that the average person is earning $8,000 less year now than they did 8 years ago. You're not interested that more Americans are unemployed than ever before, and most that are being employed are through service jobs, which are cheap, worthless jobs, or underpaid. You're not interested in this dissemination of lies about unions, and hence the evisceration of unions from 49% to under 8% of the population. You're not interested in the quality of a product made by U.S. labor at fair wages versus you'd buy something off a rack that came from Bangladesh as someone being slave worked at 14 cents an hour. You're not interested in bad foods being distributed, toxic foods being distributed, obesity as the epidemic in children, diabetes an epidemic in children and adults. You're not interested in the politicalization of medicine and healthcare, of the theft of our resources from Wall Street, the abuse of a surveillance state, unprovoked wars. So when you say you're not interested in politics, understand that you've just eliminated 95% of all the solutions that we need to correct anything. And when it comes to being interested only in philanthropic work, which exact philanthropic work and at what level? Because 90% of all the NGOs and nonprofits in America do nothing to help change anything. They're there only for themselves. I would never give a check to the American Cancer Society or the Red Cross because I know what they are. I know what so many of the environmental groups are. If you doubt me, watch the speech I gave at the UN on Earth Day, where I was a keynote speaker 2 years ago, and where the room was filled with heads of environmental groups, and I called them out very specifically on the money they've accepted from corporate polluters, and hence they no longer were interested in fighting gas hydrofracking or deep water explorations because they gotten $20 million from one of the companies that does that. So this is just so typical of today. How did all that come? That's also part of the epigenetics. We become as indifferent, as disconnected, as disjointed from what is essential in our life as were our parents. So we think that as adults, we have evolved to where our parents' input on us is insignificant or non-existent. We are living in complete and total denial. And hence, we have the problems we have today. Finally, on the healthy issues, out of every study, you look for what is really the best takeaway message. This is a really important study. At the Linus Pauling Institute at Oregon State University, they discovered that two foods out of 400 had the highest amount of immune-boosting nutrients, and they work just as effective as drugs. Grapes, red grapes, and blueberries. Quote, both of these compounds, which are called stilbenoids, work in synergy with vitamin D and have a significant impact on raising the expression of human antimicrobial peptide and genes involved in human function. And this was published in Molecular Nutrition and Food Research. So for those of you who are interested in improving your blood sugar, improving your overall immunity, red grapes and blueberries will do the trick. And that's good. We like to know that. Also, eating dark chocolate can reduce excess body fat in 1 week, according to new research on this, published in the European Review of Medical and Pharmacological Sciences, the effects of dark chocolate in a population of normal weight obese women in pilot study was the title of it. 100 grams, that's about 3 ounces. That's not much. Dark chocolate each day. And want to help your brain if you've had some excitotoxin like MSG or artificial sweetener? Ginger. For thousands of years, ginger's been used as a healing food. It aids every system in the body. The oils that ginger contains are antibacterial and antiviral and antifungal. And ginger's been found to inhibit cancer growth. A new study shows it even can reverse the damage done by monosodium glutamate and other harmful excitotoxins. And that's important because we have a whole lot of that hydrolyzed protein. And just remember, when you're eating in a vegan restaurant, and there are a lot of them around town, look carefully at the menu. They're using seitan, which is, oh, it's just, I would never touch seitan. It's just loaded with problems. And especially if you have gluten problems, you're going to have big problems. Much of it's deep fried. And a lot of the stuff comes from Chinatown, which I wouldn't trust anything comes out of Chinatown because I've seen what goes on down there and how they prepare the foods. So they bring them up in packages, and then your duck, you know, soy duck, well, what gives it its flavor? If it's just flavorings, that could be MSG. So a lot of the food in these vegan restaurants I wouldn't touch. I would ask to see the ingredients. I would ask to see, is this made from scratch in the restaurant? If it comes already pre-made, let me see the label. Don't trust anything. Not today. You can't. Now to our environmental segment. Monsanto to outlaw genetically modified labeling worldwide through the TPP. This is from hangthebankers.com. Quote, it's called the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and it's, quote, a secret trade pact being negotiated completely outside of the law with no congressional authority, but with the aim of forcing nations around the world to ban genetically modified labeling, embrace Monsanto's GMO crops, and keep pharmaceutical prices artificially high to enrich the world's medication monopolist. A purely exclusive creation of the Office of the United States Trade Representative, it created outside of law with zero public accountability. The Trans-Pacific Partnership involves White House loyalists running around the world, strong-arming over a dozen nations into signing on to a corporate-dominated agreement, knowingly misnamed free trade. Details of the Trans-Pacific Partnership are so secret that even members of Congress are not allowed to review any of them or disclose them. What we know about the Trans-Pacific Partnership has only come from leaks, as the full text, the entire agreement, is being kept not only from Congress, but also the American people. yet over 600 corporate CEOs, including CEOs of companies that have been repeatedly found guilty of felony crimes in America, have been allowed to influence the details of the Trans-Pacific Partnership agreements. Monsanto, Walmart, big pharma corporations are reportedly given top influence positions in this super-secret Obama organization that hands the future of the world over the most evil corporations of all time. And it goes into how they're going to not allow anything to be labeled with its harmful ingredients, including GMOs. I've said many times that you should let your legislator know under no circumstance should the United States sign on to this. It's being fast-tracked, and just like the Patriot Act and everything else in Congress is important. None of your legislators, the morons that they are, will actually read it. I don't think they can read. And I think that we're being extremely optimistic by giving them a 9% approval rating. I believe they should have a negative zero approval rating because they won't read this. It'll get fast-tracked, and then we will no longer have a Constitution, a Bill of Rights, state, federal protections. We'll have nothing. We'll have complete corporate state. I'm telling you, I know the facts on this. That's why you got to be careful about this. Now, I have some concerns, as I know many of you do because I've read your emails, about how does someone kill and not have any qualms about it. When you look at the photographs of Abu Ghraib, those were not American soldiers who felt remorse or had any sense of a pause. They were gloating in not just the debasement of these people who had been found guilty of nothing but were being held. But this was common, and it went clear up the chain of command. How do we have tens of thousands of rapes and sexual abuses in the military, and yet less than 1% are ever brought to trial? And then not consider that a misogynist system. How do we have Bill O'Reilly, who was really born in the wrong century? I feel sorry for Bill O'Reilly. I really do. He would have been perfect leading the crusade in 1296 or leading the Inquisitions, because I've never seen such a megalomaniac and narcissistic person in my life. But I'm not concerned about Bill as such. I'm concerned about the people that watch him and find that they hang on his every word. Because if he says you deserve to be punished or you deserve to be killed, then people go along with it. Well, where did he come to these great insights? He prides himself on being a Catholic. Which part of Catholic doctrine are you in support of that allows for the support of a regime that wantonly kills people? But I haven't seen Geraldo or any of the embedded journalists or Bill O'Reilly going out to Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, Somalia, Yemen, Vietnam, and speaking with any victims, showing their photographs and telling their stories. There are over 1 million of them in just Afghanistan and Iraq alone. There'd be 3.5 million if you included Vietnam. So when we look at who's doing all this killing, how do they live with themselves? Then you look at the police in the United States who've been militarized and how easy it is for them to taser someone when they didn't have to, kill someone when they didn't have to. If you've got an unarmed person who's nearly naked and you got 12 cops surrounding him, why do the cops always do a kill shot? Don't they train them, you know, to just take a shield and just push them to the ground and subdue them? I just see extreme violence perpetrated by our police, the stop and frisk, which is racist, and yet you have black officers, Latino officers, arresting their own. What is that? I mean, how do they live with themselves? They're supporting racism, institutional racism, but that in is the key. We are finding as long as you support violence and killing, or maiming, or napalming, or white phosphorus attacks, or depleted uranium attacks, or drone attacks, as long as you're doing it like the FBI or CIA or these other, you know, agencies, as long as you're doing it as official policy, then you're supposed to be able to remove yourself, much like the Nazis did, where you could, you know, go out and kill a lot of Jews and then go home and enjoy singing German songs with your family while you dined. Are we dealing with two different people? One that have no moral conscience, nothing that equalizes the pain they're inflicting, the destruction they're doing, with what they would do in their normal lives. What do they do when they sit in synagogue or mosque or church after they've committed any act of brutality or immoral act against another? Now, Chris Hedges has spent a lot of time with mass killers and warlords and death squad leaders. Remember, he is a Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter for the New York Times. He was in Latin America, the Middle East, Africa, the Balkans. And it comes down to this. Some of our psychopaths who relish acts of sadism and torture and murder, but others, maybe most, see killing as a job. But you could also say they see spying on you illegally as a job. They don't think themselves as a criminal, but what they're doing is illegal. But that's not how they see it. In fact, a lot of them will do it because it's good for their careers and status. But some enjoy playing God. They revel in the hyper-masculine world of force where theft and rape are perks. Now, if you want to know how hyper-masculine we are as a society, on Friday, the new video, very violent video, on Grand Theft Auto passed $1 billion in sales in just a few days. That was the fastest amount of time for the most amount of money in American history or world history for any film to make money. What would normally take several months of a blockbuster, Batman or Avatar or Iron Man to make $1 billion, it made it in days. What does it mean to the people who need that hyper-masculine image where you're engaged in rape or killing or violence? They proudly refine the techniques of murder to snuff out one life after another, largely numb to the terror and cruelty they inflict. And when they're not killing or maiming or terrorizing, they can sometimes be disarmingly charming and gracious. Some are decent fathers and sentimental with their wives and mistresses. They can dote on their pets. It's not the demonized, easily digestible character of a mass murder that most disturbs us. It is the human being. Joshua Oppenheimer's documentary, The Act of Killing, which took 8 years to make, is an important exploration of the complex psychology of mass murders. The film is the profundity of Gitta Sereny's book, Into That Darkness, an Examination of Conscience, for which she carried out extensive interviews with Franz Stegel, the commandant of Treblinka. By the way, Treblinka was one of the worst Nazi extermination camps. And Oppenheimer, too, presents candid confessions interviewing some of the most ruthless murderers in Indonesia. And one of these is responsible for over 1,000 killings himself, a man named Anwar Kongo, who was a death squad leader in Medan, the capital of the Indonesian province of northern Sumatra. And the documentary also shows the killers performing bizarre reenactments of the murders. Now, here's what we have to remember. Indonesia's military, with full U.S. support, launched in 1965 a year-long campaign to ostensibly exterminate communist leaders and functionaries and party members and sympathizers in that country. But by its end, the bloodbath, much of it carried out by rogue death squads and paramilitary gangs, had decimated the labor union movement, along with all the intellects, the artistic community, all opposition parties, university student leaders, journalists, ethnic Chinese, many who had just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. By some estimates, more than 1 million people were slaughtered. Many of the bodies were dumped into rivers, hastily buried, or just left on roadsides. Now, this campaign of mass murder is still mythologized in Indonesia as an epic battle against the forces of evil and barbarity, much as U.S. popular culture for many decades mythologized our genocide of Native Americans and held up our own killers, our gunmen, our outlaws, our murderous cavalry units of the Old West as heroes. The one-time killers in the Indonesian war against communism are cheered at rallies today as having saved the country. They are interviewed on television about the heroic battles they fought 5 decades ago. The 3 million-strong Pancasila youth, Indonesia's equivalent of the Brown Shirts, or Hitler's youth, in 1965 joined the genocidal mayhem, and now its members, like the death squad leaders, are lionized as pillars of the nation. It's as if the Nazis had won World War II, and that's what it is. In fact, there's a scene in the Oppenheimer film where Congo, who parades across the screen like a prima donna, his outside vanity and love of fine clothing on display, is interviewed on Special Dialogue. That's a television program of the state-owned television with national coverage. And he was proud of all the people he killed. And the youth in the audience, these orange and black shirt youth, applauds. And they talk about how clever they were and how they killed everyone. And he said that he just walked down the streets with a knife, and every single person he saw, he simply stabbed to death. And no one got away. But he has no guilt. He has no shame. And no one has any guilt or shame. They have no nightmares because they did it in a way that was acceptable. Well, how does it become acceptable? Well, when the government sanctions it. Now, think of the people I've counseled who came back from Vietnam. They didn't see the faces, the people they killed when they were dropping the napalm bombs at high altitudes from the B-52s. But they would later see in documentaries and newsreels and photographs, they would see like the little girl running down the street on fire. Well, that suddenly galvanized us that this wasn't something heroic. This is something that was less than barbaric. And suddenly the human side of people started to rage. And that's why a lot of people became against the war. We had to see the pictures of it. But have you seen the pictures of the Afghanistan children dying of starvation and the bad weather, where they have no clothes, no blankets, no shoes? You haven't. Have we seen on any of these buffoon shows like NBC or CBS, ABC, CNN, the pro-war channels, CNN, fascist punks that they are, have you seen them show you any of the people dying from depleted uranium or the baby's defects? Have you? You haven't. Have you seen Dennis Miller, these other clowns who actually think they have a brain? Have you seen any of these people show you, here's what happens when we go against you? Here's the impact of our white phosphorus bombs. You haven't. So as long as we sanitize a war by selecting only the journalist and the news corps that will support it, the Judith Millers, the real pro-war people, then we never see what it means to be morally responsible for our actions. And that's why we're still so enamored by the idea that you can kill in the name of your country. And since your country is always right and it's never wrong, you never have to have guilt or shame, remorse, or any second thought that you did the right thing. And yet there are millions and millions of dead and suffering out there because we don't have a moral rebalancer in our society. And those like Chris Hedges who try to give us voice, they're immediately silenced, not given a form, considered too radically left or something. So the next time you wonder, why do we have such a violent society? Why do we make Grand Theft Auto $1 billion profit in 3 or 4 days? Why don't we have mass movements against our incursions into countries like Libya and Iraq and now Syria? None of it has to do with our security. None of it has to do with protecting Americans. It all has to do with special interest. But we glorify the masculine. We glorify conquest. And we focus upon the technology. Now, tell us about this new bomb. Now, this is a 12,000-pound bomb, and once it hits, you can target. You can put it right in someone's bathroom window, right? We live with these dress rehearsals, these scripted ways of keeping the public from seeing the real consequence of our actions in conflict. And that is concerning to me. I'm Gary Knoll. Now time for Talk Back. Your turn. Call us at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Finally, after doing over 60 reports on America becoming a fascistic nation and a police state, which we are now, this is from Truthout, from L. Michael Hager, Path to Autocracy, Could America Become a Police State? And then he gives some of the things that shows that when you pass this line, you are a police state. Here's what he says. It's short. An increased amount of the federal budget going to military and security programs, 53% in the United States, by the way. But we don't have money for feeding the poor. We don't have money for building homes or converting government buildings into houseable units. Our readiness to execute anything in the name of counterterrorism. A continuing overclassification of government documents. Everything in America is secret today. Everything. A zero tolerance for government leakers or whistleblowers. A new reliance on drones for domestic surveillance, 30,000 of them. An expanding recourse to indefinite detention. An expansion of stop and frisk policing. Extending incarceration for even minor offenses. A 12-year war on terrorism that continues today and goes into the future. So that, he says, you're doing those things, you're a police state. Well, we're doing those things. And finally, a human papilloma vaccine challenge. Quote, a strong criticism from leading Israeli obstetrician gynecologist, a new article published in the Israeli newspaper, the Jerusalem Post, said that Professor Uzi Beller, an obstetric gynecologist chief and an international authority on gynecological cancers, strongly criticized Gardasil vaccination. The Center for Biology and Chronic Disease urges American pediatricians and gynecologists, obstetricians, to consider the evidence. And then it goes into the idea that they want to give 65,000 14-year-old girls in Israel Gardasil. Well, Dr. Beller voiced his criticism of Gardasil vaccination at a meeting in Tel Aviv 10 days ago. And 40 leading experts on gynecology, oncology, and women's health and vaccines, other specialties, were there. And when describing his opposition to Gardasil vaccination, Dr. Beller said, quote, I am not at all against vaccines. I just underwent the oral polio vaccine as the health ministry instructed medical institutions to give the two drops to every doctor who is in direct contact with patients. But human papillomavirus is different from all other vaccines. It's not a vaccination against cervical cancer, but against a virus that in some cases causes a pre-malignant condition and in a small number of cases a malignancy. Then he goes on to talk about all the reasons he's against it. Well, good. Finally, there's some voices inside the establishment standing up and protesting. Good for him. I'm glad to hear that. Let's see. Right now, I am told that our lines are not working. We'll get them rebooted up so you can get your call in. Because I saw all the lines go off there just a moment ago. One last thing here today on our program. First, I have a very powerful commentary I've written I'm going to do tonight. I'm going to take on Wall Street, the Federal Reserve, and the corporate elites, about 175 major corporations. I'll be presenting the paper, Who Controls the World? And I'll have no guests. It's just me for 1 or 2 hours. However long it takes to get out, that's what we'll do. You won't want to miss this. It's Progressive Radio Network, 7 p.m., or you can just call up at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the phone at 619-550-0869, 619-550-0869. 1-800-550-0869 and listen in. Now, tomorrow I'm going to take on statins are the greatest medical fraud of all time. Also, shocking revelations about private prisons, how they make their money. And welcome to the new Libya, a country liberated by NATO with no oil revenues, no security, no water, no electricity, complete anarchy, everything we predicted. And somehow the media doesn't go back and take a look at all the things they said would be beneficial if we liberated Libya. Well, we liberated it, and now take a look at what we got in return. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more on our next program. Now, we do have Luann Panessi on the line. Let's go over and say hello to Luann. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. I have two quick things. One is I just want to give people a last shout-out. I do have, for your upcoming retreat, I have some work-study positions. That just means people are free to help out to keep things clean and orderly. It's half the price. If anyone's interested in that, please call me. I'm at 631-504-6198. That's 631-504-6198. Gary's going to be one of the best retreats you've ever had because I'm talking to all these people.
And well, let's just put it in perspective for a moment. The retreat is a fundraiser. It's to help WBAI in its hour of need, which is right now. And it'll pay their payroll, and it'll help pay for the premiums of those who did not get their books or water filters and some other things. That's a good thing. But also, it's going to help change some people's lives. We have had so many people who have found that their whole lives have been changed completely. They come back, they're healthier, they have the tools they need, they've done meditation classes, artist healing, cooking classes, sprouting classes, homesteading classes, counseling, health and nutrition. They have a whole new way of looking at themselves, de-stressing, overcoming negative energy and negative influences. So I'm absolutely optimistic that the people coming, because all the rooms are filled now, it's just a work study that we always allow space for 10 people. So this is not just going away for a week. This is not just a vacation. This is really, it has the power to change your life. So for people who want a wonderful, upbeat, positive, joyful opportunity to get in the best shape, to be in a beautiful environment, this is it. More juicing than what you would ever do in a normal day. Better food than you would ever prepare for yourself. And learning how to do it. And a whole staff of extremely qualified people who've come from around the United States to share this. I have people coming from Oregon, California, New Mexico, Maine, New Jersey, Florida, and New York as part of our staff. We've got a phenomenal staff put together. So if you want to come on a work study, it's $1,000. It's normally $2,000, which is really about $8,000 that you would pay anywhere else. But because it's a fundraiser for a nonprofit station, that people generally don't have the same resources financially, it's only $2,000. But for the work study, you'll still have a chance to take in the yoga classes, my lectures, get counseled from Luann, the great food, juices, and then you would do some work throughout the day. So give her a call. Luann, your number?
Surely, 631-504-6198. That's 631-504-6198.
Again, the regular rooms are filled. This is for work study. Thank you, Luann.
Okay.
Okay, and let's now go over and say hello to Utrece Lead. Hi, Utrece.
Hello, Gary. Today we have a bit of a bright spot to talk about. We're talking about the formation of a grassroots political party that already has achieved a major milestone in New York City, ballot status.
Great. Well, that's coming right now. Utrece Lead on the Progressive Radio Network.
Today I'm more confused. Yet I look for the light through the pouring rain. You know that's a game that I hate to lose. And I'm feeling the strain. Ain't it a shame?